melk, eller? Ja, men er det ikke det? Smash! Det skal godt gjøres å spise bare én
I helgen. En podcast fra Podplay. Jeg var en tur, ja. På Gjerdrum Kulturhus og tok en prat med Flemming Rasmussen. Tenkte jeg skulle ta opp lyd fra lydbordet og glemte det helt. Så her det litt publikumsopptak. Lyden jo dårlig, men det mulig å høre hva han sier. Og jeg tar jo på engelsk, så det lettere å altså, gromsete lyd på dansk. Det hadde bare vært rot. Men jeg tenkte det bedre å legge ut enn å ikke legge ut. Her min prat med Flemming Rasmussen på Gjerdrum Kulturhus. Vi så heldige som får lov å leve I en verden full av rock og metal. Og jeg har invitert diverse ildsjeler innenfor musikk til å komme og bable om rock og metal. Så enkelt jeg. Velkommen til Metallista.
Hallo. Hei. Nei,
Jeg
tror det folk som vil ha det høyt!
Ja! Kom
igjen da!
Ja. Nå vi på kanten til feeding.
Det
gleder vi. Ja,
takk.
Nå? Er det greit nå? Ja, nydelig.
Velkommen skal være til Gjerdrum.
Murring.
Velkommen. Det skal brekes med denne masten, Flemming Rasmussen.
Ja! Dere vet ikke hvem denne mannen
Mitt navn Erik Skjerma. Jeg jobber I en kanal som spiller de samme jævla låtene absolutt hele tiden. Visste at folk kom til å le av det.
Kjempefornøyd.
Utenom det så har jeg altså Norges aller dårligste Metallica-podcast. Den begynte som en Metallica-podcast. Nå det mest dybdeintervjuer. Fordi det bare en begrenset antall ganger du kan orke å høre at folk synes at Saint Anger en dårlig platte. Og at ikke så glad I Load & Reload, synes ikke det litt en helt store. Og det greit.
For her vi en.
Men det det. Se, produsenten produserer. Teknikeren har sett dette.
Sa det, ja.
Jeg skal dukke ut noen spørsmål. Jeg skal se om det blir... Det blir litt nørdespørsmål. Det blir litt generelle spørsmål. Og så kan jeg åpne opp for litt spørsmål etterpå. For dem som skulle være våga å ha noe på lur. Det bare én fyr, men du må vente.
Jeg har 25 spørsmål.
Du har 25 spørsmål. Jeg kan garantere at du får ett, hvis du oppfører deg.
Så reglene.
Utenom det, så det jo selvfølgelig å kjøpe det man trenger av drikkevare der, og så støtte selvfølgelig Metal Against Bullying der, og så blir faen meg rock etterpå det inni der. Dette metal oppi rassøla for alle blir kjempe der. Jeg har sett setlista. Det god bit der. Det god bit der. Det deilig. Og så det en ting til. Og så det sånn at jeg jævlig dårlig dansk, og det sikkert noen der ute som kanskje ikke har det der danske øret. Jeg skjønner alt danske folk sier, jeg har det ikke, så jeg kommer til å ta det mest på engelsk. Bare fordi han jævlig god engelsk. Jeg jævlig dårlig dansk. Det jeg kommer om.
Og jeg forstår ikke hva han sier.
Nei, han forstår ikke hva han sier. Nå han ikke.
Sånn blir det.
Sånn det.
Sånn det.
Det godt.
Gammel mass! Oi, feeding!
Nå feeder vi!
Nå feeder vi!
Ja, det var deilig!
Ja.
Flemming!
Ja, hei!
Det feeding vi må jobbe noe med. Det fordi vi har de her, eller?
Kan skru om litt?
Skru ned for den der. Jeg har skruet helt ned for min.
Fuck den der.
Det skal vi ikke nå være.
Ok.
Da går det. English?
Ja. Let's say you're 6 years old. Are you raised in a musical home? Your parents,
No, not at all.
Not at all?
No, nothing.
What was your, like, your father's favorite, like, artist?
It was some Danish, like, folk singer thing. It was terrible.
And your mother?
Same thing. They were absolutely not musical at all.
Any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I have a small, smaller sister. She's just like 1 year younger than me.
Yeah.
So we're like almost like twins.
Who started exploring music first? Her. Or
I have a big brother also who's like almost 7 years older than me, and he started. So I was.
What did you listen to?
Rolling Stones.
Stones.
First thing I heard was the first Rolling Stones album.
That's your first taste of rock.
I was 6 or 7, and my brother got it, and I was like, yeah.
Do you remember which album it was?
It was the very first Stones album, yeah. And the crazy thing was that he had one of those, and it had the inner sleeve, it was either blue or red. If it was red, it was mono. I think his was blue, so it was stereo.
Uh-huh.
And on the label, after Not Fade Away, it said Samba, and I was, what the fuck is that? It was what dance you could dance to the song.
Oh, that's
it was on the
dance.
Label. Yeah, yeah. So one of them was a waltz. I was like, what?
But was it because it has a dun?
Yeah, yeah. I guess so. Yeah, yeah.
Like it.
Yeah, the first album is only blues classics. The first Stones album is only old blues classics. So yeah, I loved that.
So that got you into like.
That got me into music, and between me and my two sisters, from I was like 10 years old, we bought all the albums we would get hold of. That was fantastic. So that every time a new album came out, we bought it. One of us bought it.
Like a Rolling Stones or like?
Everything.
Everything.
I mean, I was turned. I got the first Queen album from when it came. Me and my sister, we went to concerts all the time. Problem was that concert was always sold on a Monday from an office in Copenhagen. We were living in the suburbs. So I had to like skip school because I had to buy tickets.
Yeah.
So almost every Monday I didn't come to school till 11 because I had to buy tickets for Slade or Roy Gallagher or Sweet or Gary Glitter or Roxy Music or, you know. So everything, it's fantastic. First concert was The Who.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah. In
who?
Section
which band?
72.
Which band?
The Who.
Who? Which band?
The Who. It was in Copenhagen. Yeah. With a golden earring, I suppose.
Cool.
So from that day on, I love golden earring.
As all fixated men on music, do you ever dream of like starting a band of your own?
Yeah, I played a little bit of drums when I went to high school, but I quickly found out that it wasn't for me. I still play drums, but I don't do it seriously. But I found out all the technical shit I could do real easy. So it was like, I mean, every time all the other guys in school bought a new moped, I bought a new stereo. I spent the money on a tape recorder. So I was sitting, I had like a reel-to-reel tape recorder. So I was doing what you now call mixtapes. Mm-hmm. So I took all the good songs from the albums and put them on tape. And then the last hit in the song, I edited the first hit of the next song in. So I had like, you know, reels of 2.5 hours of good rock and roll shit.
At what age?
I was probably 12, 13, 14.
Jesus. You nerd.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
So you gave up on the like band idea for yourself, but then you got like, what was your like aha moment to decide to like start shaping music?
I was in Denmark when you're like in the last 2 years of regular school. You got 1 week where you go out and try to be in like a workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in Rosenberg Studios with Freddie Hansen recording Gasoline. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, that's what I gotta do the rest of my life. And apparently I actually stopped them during the mix once because one of the tape recorders ran out. They used that to do delays.
Mm.
And I think Freddie then went, this guy knows what he's doing. And at that time, He was working at a studio called Rosenberg Studios in Copenhagen, and the control room was about this size of this stage, and when you sat behind the desk, the wall was here, which is not a good listening position. So he wanted to expand it, but the owner said no. And then he decided he wanted to build his own studio, and that's what eventually turned out to be Sweet Silence. And I was there from day one, starting tearing office walls down in what ended up being the studio.
But did you, were it like sort of like an internship?
Yeah, he was like my
mentor.
Yeah, my mentor, and I was an apprentice. And the first thing we did was Vekka Vinulilu with Gasoline.
Yeah.
Because we'd done the live recording for the Gas Live Sudan album. And that was produced by Roy Thomas Baker. So I started looking over the shoulders of Roy Thomas Baker.
Picking up
trees. Which was like, okay, smart. All right, okay. So, and we did all the, because we just built the studio, Roy is like a total wizard with sound. So we had like fabrics, like these stones here on the floor, we had stuff like that lying around. And he would build like a small house, put a speaker in one end and a microphone in the other end, and he'd feed Franz Beckerli's guitar to that when he did solos, and we'd record that as a guitar solo. And you'd get these sounds that you couldn't recreate in any other way. And I've done shit like that ever since. We once carried a Marshall cabinet one flight of stairs down to put it in a room under the stairs that sounded really good in Roy's opinion, and then like 100 meters of cable to the control room, and the amp was there and we could sit and tweak it, and then mic cables also. It was like fuck, but it sounded good.
Yeah. Metallica.
Yeah.
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 It's hard to come here and try and ask you a question that you haven't been asked before.
Yeah,
but
go
these
ahead.
People want to hear the same.
Yeah,
shit,
of course.
Probably.
Go ahead.
Let's start. How and when did you get in touch with Metallica?
Lars actually called me. What happened was that they'd done Kill 'Em All and weren't too satisfied with how it turned out. It's obviously still a classical album because the songs are like super great and all that. But they weren't satisfied with the way it sounded and the way it was made, the whole production process. So they decided they wanted to record it in Europe for two reasons. One, the dollar was very, very strong.
Oh.
It was twice what it is now. And that actually meant that they could get more than two times the studio time in Europe for what they would pay for a studio in the States. And because they were still on Megaforce Records when they did Ride the Lightning, and Ride the Lightning is actually released on Megaforce, and then Elektra gave them a contract, and then it came out on Elektra. Also, they didn't get that much money to do an album, so they could tour Europe and make money to record the second album, which then turned out to be Ride the Lightning. And Lars called me because they'd heard, they wanted a good studio with a good in-house engineer. And they'd heard some of the stuff I'd done, especially Difficult to Kill with Rainbow. Mm. And I think it probably was an added bonus, it was in Denmark. But I'd never even heard about Lars before he called me. Mm. And I never heard about Metallica, I didn't know they existed at all. So I was like, okay, that's it, okay, that's it. So I didn't actually hear Kill 'Em All till the first day in the studio.
But did you check out the first record though?
No, I didn't hear it till we started in the studio, because I was working on something else.
So you were basically like, can you pick?
It was like, I didn't know what we were doing.
No.
He just called and said, we're four guys from San Francisco, we play like hard rock. And I went, yeah, that's right up my alley. And I said, did you want to record? I said, yeah, sure, come over.
How much did Flemming Rasmussen cost in 1980 something?
Probably more than today.
Oh.
Yeah. Because, I mean, studios are cheap, really cheap these days.
Yeah.
So it was probably twice what I cost today.
Right.
Yeah, because the studio costs were horrendous in those days. 80s were the studio's heaven. You know, I mean, don't make a studio today. Forget it. Everybody's got their own shit they record on. So, yeah.
How was your first impressions when these guys shows up?
I totally loved it. It was like, I was like, what the fuck is this going on here? I was like, the energy and the vibe and, you know, that whole power thing they came with, I was like, yes, yes, yes. Actually, at one point during the recordings, my my mentor, Freddie Hansen, I've been working, doing my own work for quite a few years at the time, but he like came in and he was like really fatherly, did like this and said, "Are you okay, Fleming?" I went, "Yeah, what are you talking about?" "And are you okay?" I said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, what, they can't play? I was like, what the fuck? And we went, actually went into the studio between New Year and Christmas and New Year to record the last drum overdubs.
Mm.
And then he went home just before New Year because they had to get New Year's Eve in San Francisco.
You say drum overdubs, yeah. Explain that a bit.
Sometimes when there's like these da-da do with toms,
yeah.
He would play it live,
mm-hmm.
and we would take another set of toms and dub on top of that, so the tom sound was, instead of this, was this. So there was a lot of that going on, and you know, the odd cymbal he didn't hit, we'd punch that in and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that stuff going around. I mean, a regular session when we did Master of Puppets, that the studio was had two sessions in the 80s. We had a session from 10 in the morning till 6 in the evening. And then from 6 to 7, there was a changeover. And then the evening session started at 7 and went on till it was supposed to go to 3. That was 8 hours. But normally we'd end up at 4 or 5, you know, 5:30. And on Master of Puppets, the management actually paid my wife to cook for them. So we started every day for 4 months. They came to my house at 6 o'clock. Dinner was ready. We sat around the table. We had dinner. We talked about what we needed to do today.
Mm-hmm.
Then we all walked like the 1 kilometer from my house to the studio. So if you were in Copenhagen in the autumn of 1985, around where I lived, you could have said hi to Metallica because we just walked. Because nobody in Denmark knew who the fuck Metallica was. I mean, nobody. And then we'd go to the studio and we would finish off. And they now lived at Hotel Scandinavia, which is now a big Radisson hotel in Copenhagen, and we'd finish off at 3, maybe 4, maybe 5, but we would always, no matter when we ended, they would always hang out in the studio till like 5:30, 5:45. And I was like, what the fuck is this? Why don't they go home and sleep? And it turns out that the morning buffet at Hotel Scandinavia opened at 6. So they could get on a taxi, go out, pick out on the morning buffet, go to sleep, get up, go to my house, eat dinner. So that was it. And actually, when Lars left on the 30th of January, on the way out, when we'd sent all the tapes and everything, the manager from the hotel came running after him because they didn't have breakfast in their rooms. So he got like a bill on 25,000 Danish kroner for breakfast. And Lars just hurried into the taxi and drove off. I'm thinking they paid it by now.
Couple albums. What's your least favorite moment in the studio with these guys? What was the lowest point where you were thinking, bleh?
There wasn't really any points of that at the time. I mean, the whole Lars James thing hadn't started yet. You have to recognize that when I worked with them, they were, you know, on the way rise.
Yeah.
So from album to album, it got better, but they got bigger and bigger tours. They got more and more jobs. They, you know, so there wasn't really, I mean, there wasn't really any fights. There was a lot of really funny moments, actually. Actually, on And Justice for All, me and Lars, we developed like a thing when we were sitting talking like this, James. We would sit and talk like this in Danish, and yeah. I would just go, James. And James would go, what the fuck?
Make him feel like you were talking
yeah,
about
exactly, yeah. Yeah. Which was a thing we kind of developed then. But there was, I mean, there was a lot of funny moments. But not, I mean, obviously, when Cliff died, was that, I mean, that's got to be it. But that wasn't in the studio. But if that was... That was just fucking weird. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't understand that he wasn't there anymore. It was strange.
Did you feel that the band kind of had a bit of a cold shoulder to the new guy coming in?
Yeah, I think we. I often think that the reason why there's no bass on Injustice for All.
There's no bass on it?
It has got, it's because of two things. I didn't mix it.
That's probably your most used sentence.
Oh yeah.
I did not mix it.
I did not have it. I mean, there's probably two reasons. Reason one is that they were probably not over Cliff's death yet. Reason number two is that what they hated most about Jason was that he was a fanboy. He was a huge Metallica fan. So he would never fight for his opinion. He would just go, all right. Because he thought it was fantastic to be a bass player in Metallica. So I'm thinking, I mean, the two guys that mixed it said it I was at the inauguration of Metallica in when they got into Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they invited everybody over, and we had like a party the day before at the House of Blues in Cleveland, and they had like a roast, which is an American thing where you go and just talk shit about the guy you're celebrating.
We have those in Norway,
yeah.
But they're really bad.
And they said, we did a great mix. You could hear everything, it sounded great. Then Lars and James came in. And the first thing Lars said, no, that's not my bass drum sound. I had like a big graphic equalizer 32 band that I had put on his bass drum to get the sound we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd taken a picture of that. And he hadn't realized that it was already recorded, so he wanted that on top again, because that was his bass drum sound. That's why the bass drum sounds like it does on Injustice 4. And then they say, take the bass down so you can barely hear it, and then take a 3B further down. And I'm guessing they wanted a reaction from Jason, but I don't know. Lars has never told me why. But it is pretty obvious that they probably did it to piss Jason off, so he could, like, you know, he should have taken the fight there.
But it seems like a weird thing to try to piss somebody off by possibly weakening your...
I think they thought it sounded great with the bass low. I mean, there's it's guitars and drums. What's not to like?
Yeah, I get it.
And the funny thing about it is that I've read somewhere that Injustice for All is the album in the world who's inspired most people to make a band. So Injustice sound on the bass... I'll fix that.
Thank you, one person.
Yeah. But I mean, Lars always comes, you know, once they've done an album, Lars comes by with a master and we have a listen to it together. And when he came with Injustice for All, I just went, because he's smaller than me, not many people are. But it was like, what? Anyway, what do you mean? There's no bass. There's lots of bass. There's no bass. And it was like, I can hear it. No, you can't. Like, what the fuck is this? So, I mean, it was done by then, so.
Did you ever hear Jason's thoughts about that?
No, but I've heard Jason's bass, and it's absolutely fantastic, because I recorded it. I'm
Such
one of the six people in the world who knows how good that bass
That's
is.
That's why it's a dick move to say a thing like that.
I heard it. But again, I think once you released an album, it's like a statement in time.
Yeah.
So once it's out, you shouldn't change it. Because that's it. Done. Next album.
Just because I'm wondering, because I have my thoughts, and he has his, and they're possibly not the same. How many here, when Injustice for All got remastered a couple of years ago, wish they could have a remix with some bass? Raise your hands. 2, 3, 4, 5.
No,
well, the rest is leave it as it is. Yeah, okay. Cool. Well, fuck me then.
Yeah.
Herved erklærer jeg denne posen med smash og helgen for åpnet.
Smash! Det skal godt gjøres å spise bare én i helgen.
Spiser du reker? Mm. Ikke du allergisk mot skalldyra?
Ja, det derfor jeg ikke spiser skalle. Tenker det går greit,
ja. Ja, det holder ikke alltid å tenke at det går greit. Akkurat som på nett. Fordi 9 av 10 har blitt utsatt for svindelforsøk, lanserer Telenor Sikre, som beskytter deg mot svindel og digitale trusler. Skaff deg Sikre på Telenor.no eller i Telenor-butikken.
Studio experimenting.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing, like putting a guitar cabinet.
Yeah, yeah, all of that, yeah, yeah.
Anything on these albums that we might not know is a thing?
There's a lot of backward stuff going on especially on Master of Puppets. It was apparently the thing to do.
Example?
The end solo in Orion, and also there's a solo at the end of Master of Puppets that I forgot we'd done. I heard it, I was like, oh, right, yeah, we did that.
It makes that ambient.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, there's also the whole Sanitarium thing. Mm-hmm. The beginning of Sanitarium is just one guitar playing the riff with some effects on the side, but that's all mono. And then once it starts for real, I literally flick a switch where it says mono stereo on an AMS stereo delay with like a harmonizer on it. And I simply do that and we recorded that.
But the harmonizer does like add an octave or something?
No, it just adds a slightly detuned one, like a chorus thing.
Okay, cool.
And it just goes from that to this.
Widens it.
Yeah. No, it goes from mono to stereo. Sounds fucking hella good. Hearing all that equipment yesterday was like, yes. It's one of the things I learned from Roy Thomas Baker, because he did that a lot with Queen. And I thought that's an obvious place to do it. And then on top of that, there's a lot of tremolo guitars. And a lot of those are controlled by a click track. So you actually use the click track and send it into a gate. So that the guitar sound opens with the click, so it goes like this all the time instead of doing this on the knob. I mean, it does it, so you just hit a chord and it goes wang, 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 wang. Mm. And there's tons of those on Sanitarium in the beginning on the clean guitars.
It's so subtle though.
Yeah.
In a way. Like when you listen to it, yeah. I don't think about that.
No,
I'm a geek with things.
And then there's another really important story when we did.
You got time, right?
You got, yeah. 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 Cool. When we did Injustice for All, because we recorded everything analog, and Lars had like 11 cymbals, and he had like a system.
Is that about 5 too many?
Wait till you hear the story. And he had like microphones underneath them, because that was a new thing that he'd been endorsed, and there was a little mix and he'd done like a mix, and I had like an extra stereo feed apart from the cymbal mics I put up. But because we recorded the drums in bits, it was difficult for him to remember which cymbal he hit. And we'd always punch in on a one, which was a bass drum and a cymbal at the same time. So Lars, he's not stupid, he had bought one of the very first VHS cameras. So he could record himself playing the drums. And then when we got to the point where we had to punch in, you'd just look at the video and say, oh, I hit that cymbal, and he would start there. Which was a really good idea. And I think the first song we recorded was probably the title track, the Injustice song. And he did like a really good bit, like a minute or two. And then there was like a bit that wasn't too good. And then he took the video camera out and he looked at it and he went, I can't see me. And I said, which cymbal did you hit? I can't see me! And he suddenly realized he had 11 cymbals. And he'd just been on tour with Ozzy and Van Halen. And nobody had seen him. So he calls Jake Fleming and he says, from here to here, get rid of all that. And then he removed the cymbals. And since that day, Lars doesn't have, he might have a ride here, but he doesn't have any cymbals here, which actually means that he can see what everybody else on stage is doing. And everybody knows what Lars Ulrich looks like because he's one of the most recognizable drummers in the world because he doesn't sit behind 10 kilos of grass.
But he, he doesn't use a ride live now.
I think he's got one between the bass drums, very low.
No, he has like this fucked up China thing.
Well, then he uses that as a ride.
What a guy, what a guy.
He's got to have somewhere to put the Danish flag. That's yeah. The way it is.
Okay, you work with him for three albums. They head into the studio and make the Black Album. Your reactions are what?
I loved it. Actually, they paid me to be standby for a month. When they started the Black Album, and we never got around to that story because I had to I didn't start recording Injustice because what happened was Lars called me in November and said we booked the studio from January 3rd for 4 months. You're producing the new album, and I went nope. Yeah, you are. I can't. My wife's pregnant. I'm doing an album with Ann Lennon. She's pregnant. The back vocal singer, Sana, she's pregnant. We can't postpone. I can't move those sessions. So I had to say no to Injustice for All. So I actually turned it down because, I couldn't move the sessions I already had. I was booked like 4 months. The next 4 months.
It was
your
big, I'm just producing pregnant people sessions.
That's why Ann Lennon, the girl we produced, she's called pregnant Danish folk singer in Metallica language.
Yeah.
And then like 3 months into January, they got Mike Klink, who did Appetite for Destruction with Guns N' Roses, to do it. And he's really, really good, but it was a really bad matchup with Metallica because he's more like a blues rock thing. And you can say a lot about Metallica, but it's not blues rock. So 3 weeks into January, the phone rings at home. It was before we had iPhones and everything. And it's Lars, and the only thing he says is, when can you come? They hadn't done a thing for 3 weeks. I put a lot of, work through the weekends and moved a lot of sessions so I could go over there on February 14th. And the only thing they'd done was they'd recorded a B-side for a single, just the drum track. They were still doing guitar sound. They hadn't gotten James's guitar sound yet.
3 weeks?
No, 5 weeks, because this was February 14th.
Yeah.
They started January 3rd.
I'm not a
bad. It was so bad that James had hired another guitar player to play his guitar when they did the sound check. Because he didn't want to bother. Then he came in every night and just said, that sounds like shit, and went again. And they had to start all over the next day. It must have been terrible. I'm pretty sure.
Was it because Matt Green was trying to do something different?
I heard what they'd done, and it sounded like a mediocre blues band playing on it in a pub. So I just took everything down and we started.
So it sounded like
low
the real.
You said that, and that's why they asked me, because they weren't sure it was going to work out with Bob Rock. So they actually paid me to take a month vacation. So I was actually standby on the Black Album and was there to start them out.
But you put this, or I guess maybe Lars swings by and lets you listen to this first, I guess?
Yeah.
What's your initial
reaction? I thought it was fucking great. I loved it.
Yeah.
But it is a huge change. It's the change from them being a thrash band where the songs are long and complex and there's different parts and everything to one song, one riff.
Mm.
And then James started to like singing, because he hated singing on all the albums I did.
Yeah.
I mean, James hated it. Every time we had to do vocals, I had to fucking kick him in the studio.
Oh.
He hated it. He hated the sound of his own voice. He just, you know, he loved writing the lyrics, but singing it, he didn't like it.
Did it, like, get involved, though? Get better for each
album? Yeah, better from each album. Yeah, yeah, and he got better and better at it.
Which album do you think James sings the best on, though? Like, vocal performances only, not, like...
Probably on Injustice.
Mm.
Yeah.
Confidence in his voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also because the lyrics are so fucking damn good.
Mm.
Yeah, they're really, really good on Justice. Mm. I like it a lot.
In the aftermath of these three records,
mm-hmm.
do you get a lot of mail and stuff by people wanting to come to you to get the Metallica sound?
Yeah, but I turn them down. I don't want to do like 10 Master of Puppets a year.
No.
So I do a lot of
other
shit.
Any big things though?
Try knocking on your door.
Yeah, but I obviously always do those.
Oh, okay.
Because if you're a big name, you have your own thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the first thing I say to a new band when they come into the studio. You don't want to sound like everybody else. You want to sound like you.
But
find out what the fuck you want.
But also you have the 90s, where a lot of bands try to be something else for a period.
Oh, yes. And I hated it. But, yeah. I didn't do a lot of that shit, thank God.
And we were talking about tape, analog recording. What's your view on like newer metal music and hard rock? Has it lost some of the charm at being able to have all the tools, you as well, have
a modern
studio, and like it's an easier workflow?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is that a lot of this sound replacing makes them sound too much the same.
Yeah.
And there was a long time until recently where the loudness war just made it unbearable to hear more than two tracks.
Mm.
So yeah, I kind of was opposed to that. I mean, I did in what, 90 something, I did Covenant with Morbid Angel because I thought I could do a better take on that death metal sound or whatever it is.
Mm.
All these genres, I don't give. I have no idea what the genres are. To me, it's just music.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit whether it's black or blue or green or death or metal. It's like, okay, it's music.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of records since from Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
All in different. Various colors and shapes.
Yes, yes.
Is it one of those that you wish you were there for?
No, the Black Album I would have loved to have done.
Yeah, because of the songs?
Yeah, and then I'm guessing we have to go all the way to probably maybe Saint Anger.
Because
I actually really like Saint Anger because they're trying to change their sound. And so every second time I hear it, I think, wow, that's fucking crazy that they dare do that. And then the next time I hear it, I think that's the fucking worst demo I've ever heard in my life.
there's something really weird about that.
So I would have loved to have done that. And because I'm pretty sure they had an idea doing that.
Mm.
But probably Bob Rock was not the person to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's more or less playing bass on most of that, right? Mm-hmm. Or is Rob there already?
I think, I don't know. Does anybody know?
Yeah, Bob Rock plays.
And I mean, at that point, they should have kicked him out and gotten a bass player.
Okay.
That would have helped a lot.
Yeah. After the Bob Rock collaboration ended, did they ever come back to you?
No, but we still talk.
Yeah.
So we're not, I mean, we're still friends and everything
is
fine.
Yeah. But like, have they ever talked about returning to make a record with you?
No, not since. We haven't discussed it other than when I heard Hardwired's Self-Destruct, I looked at Lars and I said, that's probably the first album I wish I would have done. And he said that was the best critic he has had ever. So I'm guessing we're still, you never know. We might want to go back to that. I mean, if the Beatles...
I think everybody in the
room... Yeah, I know. I'd love to do it. I mean, they just call. I mean, I'd even do it with Jason. That's fine.
You have a book? I wrote a book about
my life in Sweet Silence called Rock og Stjernestøv. And I actually bought 30, but everybody at the show yesterday bought it, so it's sold out.
Yeah.
So, but we're talking about coming back in some time for the Ride the Lightning 40-year jubilee next year.
Yeah.
We're not gonna do it on the date it was released. Because it turns out that was the day I got married. So on the 27th of June next year, it's 40 years ago, Ride the Lightning was released, but I'm having a party with my wife celebrating our 40th anniversary. So I'm guessing if I say it, I'm just going to pop to Norway.
Internally, you're kind of like
Yeah, of course.
But can you order the book anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, if people want to buy it, they can come to me and we can write their info down. But I'll do a link on my homepage and if you want to order it, it's in Danish, fortunately.
In Danish? Yeah, it should work out.
It should work. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Swedes don't understand. I'm actually hoping to get it translated to Swedish.
You should get it.
And I'm trying to get it, yeah, exactly.
It's probably a lot.
The thing is,
is it self-published though?
No, I have a, I have a publishing company. The thing is, you need somebody who pays that whole printing the first stack of books, because it's a pretty huge expense.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're looking at it.
Yeah.
I mean, Lars wrote the foreword and he wrote that in English, so that's already done.
Da det seg sånn at...
Spørsmål?
Ja, vi tenkte jeg skulle ta noen spørsmål. Jeg skal være litt ordstyrig. Kan begynne med hatten. Hattmann?
Nei, ja.
Reis deg opp hvis du tør, og så spør du høyt og tydelig.
Norskere, danskere, engelskere...
Da, han skjønner alt. Han er jævlig god. Det er bare jeg som er mongol.
Ok, det var ikke tenkt i engelsk. Deaf
Yeah.
What do you make of the mastering, the overall sound?
I totally hate it.
Everybody will hate it.
Yeah. How could that
It's because Lars wanted Death Magnetic to be the loudest album in the world. So it's actually on the album, I mean on the CD, it's actually 2 dB above zero, so it already distorts out of your CD player. And right now with streaming, we have a thing called LUFS, L-U-F-S, which is a measuring a way we measure loudness, and we do that because all the streaming services put everything to minus 14 LUFS, and that has effectively killed the loudness war. Because if you compress everything so the dynamics is only 8 dB, you're gonna be turned 6 dB down when you stream. So I mean. And then you've already fucked the sound up if you compressed it too much, unless that's the sound you want. And I'm pretty sure Death Magnetics is a much better album than the way it sounds. But yeah, I hated it. I think I've only heard it 2 times. I can only hear 2 songs and then I have to take it off.
Then there's this guy that had 25 questions, but he gets one now. If it's really good, you get another one.
Fleming.
Yeah?
I love you, man.
Yeah, but so it's hard.
Back in the days when you first started working with Metallica, you didn't know what they were about.
No.
So you say in the book, Lars' biography, you first listened to the music after they came around.
Yeah.
And you thought, oh my God, it's awful. It's like fast and, you know, the Kill 'Em All.
Yeah.
So but gradually you got it.
I learned to love it, yeah. I mean, I've always been a hard rock kind of person, so it was right up my alley.
So afterwards, you got it. People around say, oh, what is this kind of music? And they say, don't you get it? It's fucking great, man.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's what you were worried
about. Yeah.
So, that's right, the lighting area.
Yeah.
But what did you think when they came around the next round for Master Puppets and you heard the demos? What did you think then?
Actually, the demos for Master of Puppets are really, really good. And I heard all the songs and I thought this is going to be a killer album. I loved every piece of it. And it was, the good thing about Master of Puppets was, that we all agreed on how it should sound in the end. That's also why And Justice for All sound different, because we kind of felt that, right, the Lightning and Master of Puppets was like a movement towards like the ultimate thrash album. And once we were done with Master of Puppets, we were like, done it. Yeah, we can't do that any better. So that's why they changed direction there, because, and that's also why I don't want to do too many bands who call me and say, hey, we would like to sound like Master of Puppets. I'm like, all right, call. So that's, yeah.
Again, thank you for some amazing albums.
Yeah, I mean, you're
like
welcome.
I said to you, Ride Lightning, my favorite.
Yeah.
But just a question, at what point did you realize that you were making music history? When did it strike you that you were a part of something that would really put out there something that would change the musical world?
That was probably sometime during Master of Puppets.
What track?
No, it was sometime during the, it wasn't any of the tracks. It was just the whole vibe and the whole feeling. And then when it came out and they sold so many copies so quick, I knew we're doing something right here. And but it was, I mean, when we did it, it was more or less us five against the rest of the world. So and that was the feeling that we had, you know. We want this to be a strong and fucking, you know, we want to wipe out all the competition because we're the best. That was the feeling we had when we did it.
Det en Herman der bakerst der. Ja, du med hånden oppe. Høyt og tydelig.
Hi. I'd like to ask you, during the time you are producing the Just For All album, during the song called Frey End of Sanity, it was hard as well during the time on the studio for Lars to master up, because it seems that one of the songs that I heard that he had some hard time to play.
Most of the songs on Injustice for All were difficult for Lars to play, but but it was also because we wanted a level of perfection that was actually higher than the band was capable of. And that was more or less the mantra on all three albums. If the band was this good, we wanted it to be this good, and if they were this good, we wanted it to be that good. And on Justice for All, the band was here, but we wanted it to sound like they could play like that. And it actually took us 2.5 months to do the drums on Injustice for All. So it was like a week a song.
But he's, as well on the song himself, is different beats in compared to the rest of the others?
Yeah, but I mean, the strange thing, the things that everybody else thinks is difficult, he does in the first take.
Okay.
So it probably wasn't the most difficult song for him to play. I don't remember it as being that difficult. There were other passages that were much more difficult for him. But just as a comparison, the part with the machine gun with the double bass drums hits in one, he did that in one take, first take. That was just, and I just went, oh, okay. And I was like, Lars, come and have a listen. And he went, no, come and have a listen. And he was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Are there any questions?
And now. back to this. You said when the sessions with Justice for All started, And and Lars started playing drums. I think, what the fuck has happened to this boy?
Yeah.
He's playing like magic.
Yeah. I mean.
But, sorry. But at one point, there's this song. I don't know. You just say it's Justice. If it's a song, it's Justice. I don't know. But he could not hit one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
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 Can you tell us more about it?
It was he'd done like a long part of the title track and Justice for All, and there was one snare hit where he doesn't hit the skin, but he hits the rim. So instead of going, it goes click. So I said, everything else is good. Just go in and fucking hit the snare.
And
just, you know, like that. And he tried it 7 times, and I told him, cut it here, get in here. You press that one and that one, then it records, and I went in and I did it in one take. and he was like, okay, I think that was okay, let's just have a listen. I just went in and said, Lars, it's fine. let's just listen, Lars, it's fine.
Det er så deilig hvordan alle her koser seg ekstra med å høre om at Lars litt dårlig. Det liksom det alle koser seg med.
Lars, no one!
At one point, I don't remember if it's the bells in the beginning of For Whom the Bell Tolls, but we took an anvil, like big iron anvil. The studio was on the first floor. We carried up 3 people. It was like 60 kilos. And Lars had to sit and bang it with a hammer, and he couldn't hit it. It was like, it was always out of time. I did that too. So all the easy shit, Lars has really big difficulties. All the difficult shit he does in first take. It's very, very strange. So I'm guessing probably Freyd, he played in like 2 days where he normally would spend a week.
Damer og herrer, Flemming Rasmussen.
Du har hørt en podcast fra Podplay. En enklere måte å høre podcast på. Last ned appen Podplay, eller se podplay.no.
Herved erklærer jeg denne posen med Smash og helgen for åpnet.
Smash, det skal godt gjøres å spise bare én i helgen.